Oh yeah. Special shout out there to B&D Productions over on YouTube for that awesome Halloween themed instrumental. And guess what? It's your boy, Second City Sam, Sam Piopo, finally back bringing you the hot takes. That is Second City Sam's hot takes. Today is October the 28th, 2020, and it is the first hot takes episode in quite a while. And you know what? Times have changed. I have not. I'm back. And guess what? Every Wednesday will now be Second City Sam's hot takes. I want to remain committed to this podcast. I'm going to be having special guests on quite often, bringing you all the opinionated thoughts that is in this lively brain of mine, among others. I'd like to wish everybody a safe and happy Halloween, since this will be the last show I do before Halloween. I don't know if wherever you're listening, they are allowing gatherings or trick-or-treating for the kids or whatever, but if they are, please be safe, please be smart. But yeah, I'd like to welcome you in. We got a lot to talk about today. Obviously, there's been a lot of stuff on my mind in a few different sports, but some of the stuff we're going to be covering today is, man, I like that beat. That beat was in my head, and I'm glad I found it. B&D Productions over on YouTube. Pretty sick beat. Oh, we're going to be covering the Bears. Chicago Bears. Oh boy. Those who follow me on social media know I have a lot to say about the Bears. And if you're going to complain about some opinionated things that I might say, this isn't the show for you, because this is where I let everything loose, especially on the Bears. We're going to talk about the World Series. It just ended last night. The Dodgers are World Series champions. There's a lot of controversy around said World Series, and we're going to get into that. The White Sox managerial search is heating up a little bit, and I am not a White Sox fan, but I have many thoughts excuse me, on who and how they should be approaching this decision. I want to talk about the Cubs in their championship window possibly being closed. And obviously this is totally subjective, but we're gonna discuss what pieces should stay, what pieces should go, and really if any of that's gonna make a difference. We're gonna talk about the Blackhawks rebuild. Stan Bowman and company released a letter to the fans, I believe it was just last week, describing their rebuild. I'm going to read that letter aloud, and I'm going to give my thoughts and suggestions on how this rebuild is going to pan out. I want to talk about the Bulls rebuild as well. Obviously, they made some key signings with Billy Donovan now being the new head coach of the Bulls. I'm not too big into basketball, but I follow enough just to know what's going on, so I do want to talk a little bit about that. And obviously, here at the end, I want to talk about the WWE and AEW television programs, that is Raw, SmackDown, NXT, AEW Dynamite, and I don't really watch AEW Dark. But there are some things that I do want to discuss with them, including their fan bases. And those of you who know me and follow me on social media know some things on how I feel about these fan bases, but we're going to get into that a little bit more. So we got a full slate of things on my mind today, and I'm going to get it started right now with the Chicago Bears. They played like crap on Monday night. Obviously, we all know that. They got destroyed by the Rams 24-10. That's a two-touchdown game, I know, but it was much, much worse than that. And I want to know what is going on in the mind of Matt Nagy for this reason. They scored three offensive points. Three offensive points in a nationally televised Monday night game against the Los Angeles Rams, who, in my opinion, are a very beatable team. 24-10 is the final score, but the one touchdown scored by the Bears in that game was not even by the offense. No, it was by Eddie Jackson. Eddie Jackson returned a fumble in the fourth quarter for a touchdown to give the Bears their only score of the game. Now, what does this mean? We all know the Bears' offense is bad, right? It's bad. But why is it bad? Well, let's start. Let's go down the list of things here. One, the quarterback. We've all been hearing this for the past however many years now. The Bears never, ever have a good quarterback. And we're used to that. We really are. We don't want to be used to it, but we are. So Mitch Trubisky gets benched, what is it? He gets benched after midway through week three, I believe. Week three, he gets benched during the game against the Falcons. Nick Foles comes back, leads the Bears victory. Great. Awesome. Now, a couple of games later, now that Nick Foles has donned the starting position for about 4 weeks now, we are in the exact same spot offensively that we were with Mitchell Trubisky. And I don't understand how. You have two completely different quarterbacks. Mitch Trubisky, he can escape the pocket. He can extend plays. And he could gain yards with his feet. Nick Foles cannot scramble. Looks like he's stuck in quicksand every time he does try to escape the pocket. And sometimes makes boneheaded decisions along with Mitch Trubisky. So I would think, as the head coach and offensive play caller for the team, Matt Nagy would adjust playbook to said quarterback, correct? Mitch Trubisky's in, great. We can run all these read options. We can run all these quarterback options and all this trickery nonsense, escaping the pocket and throwing, off his back foot, throwing across the field, like the stuff Mitch Trubisky does. But when if you're going to decide to take Mitch Trubisky out, which they did, and replace him with Nick Foles, opposite style quarterback, you would then assume that Matt Nagy would adjust and at least bring in some added protection, because we're going to get into this in a minute. We're still on the quarterbacks. But allow Nick Foles to stand in said pocket, since he cannot escape the pocket because he looks like he's in quicksand all day long. But you try to make Nick Foles do the same thing that Mitch Trubisky does, and it's just not working. And I'm not trying to make an excuse for Nick Foles, because yesterday was probably the worst game I've seen him play, maybe even when he was on the Jaguars. But you're not really giving him an opportunity to do the things he's good at. He's not an outside the pocket quarterback. He's a pocket passer. He's not a mobile quarterback. His best is when, and I'm not saying his best is any good, because it's not really, but his best is when you go a seven-step drop back, and you better have enough protection, because he's going to take some time to throw, he's going to go through all of his options, he's going to read the safeties and cornerback's eyes. You got to have time for that stuff. But there lies the problem. Problem number two with the Bears offense, the offensive line. And we knew about this problem. The problem has been there for the last couple seasons, probably since John Fox was fired. Maybe even beforehand. Mitch Trubisky has been starting for the Bears for about 3 years now. Not one game did Mitch Trubisky not have to run for his life. I feel like we just kind of accepted it, because Mitch Trubisky can escape the pocket and he can extend plays with his legs. But now that Nick Foles is in for Trubisky, Now the offensive line is truly rearing its ugly head. Not to mention they can't run block, but they're having our quarterback run for his life back there. And when you're running for your life, you're going to make split-second decisions, and those split-second decisions aren't always correct. That's not always the correct one. That's why you saw, what did he throw? 2-3 interceptions last Monday. He doesn't have any time to throw the ball. And especially since he's a pocket passer, he's going to need time to throw the ball. So we know we have this problem. We know Charles Leno sucks. He's a penalty machine. We know Cody Whitehair is the only respectable offensive lineman on this football team. Bobby Massey sucks. James Daniels is unproven. Rashad Coward sucks. I mean, where else do you want to go with this? Ifedi, he sucks too. You know you have this problem, and you're a professional NFL franchise general manager. You know your team has a problem. In the offseason last year, you can go even as far as the offseason before. That's fine. Right after the Bears missed that field goal in 2018 in the playoffs. We have a problem. Great, so let's address it. But he doesn't address it. How is this not a fireable offense? What do you do when your team lacks at a position? You fill that position by any means necessary. You draft. You make trades. You pick somebody up via free agency. None of that has occurred. The offensive line sucks. The Bears ran the football okay for the first 2 weeks of the year. After that, it's the same damn thing as last season. And it's mind-blowing to me that Ryan Pace continues to let this happen. Under his watch, under the scrutiny that he's been facing, he still has not addressed the offensive line. And I don't care who you have at quarterback. I don't care if you have Patrick Mahomes. I don't care if you have Aaron Rodgers. I don't care if you have Tom Brady. I don't care if you have Russell Wilson. Any of these guys that I just named would fail. Fail with the offensive line that the Chicago Bears set on the field every Sunday. Would they do a little better than Nick Foles and Mitch Trubisky? Sure, I'll give you that. But that's not the point. The point is, for the last 3 seasons, Ryan Pace, Matt Nagy, and the freaking McCaskies, throw Ted Phillips in there too, because he's a joke too, they have allowed this stuff to happen. They have allowed the Bears to, well, they have allowed Ryan Pace to not address the situation, or the positions, I should say, that need to be addressed. Offensive line, not addressed. Quarterback, addressed in 2017. Failed in 2019. Still tried to extend the experiment. Failed again. Replaced with a guy you spent, 20-something million guaranteed on? Failed. So what exactly has Ryan Pace done correctly here? Oh, well, we got a great head coach. Problem number 3 with the offense. Matt Nagy. Do we have a great head coach? Because a great head coach understands when something needs to be changed for the benefit of the team. A great head coach understands that if his play calling isn't getting it done, he should take a step back and maybe give the reins to offensive coordinator Bill Lazor. You know, because that's like his job title, to coordinate the offense. Matt Nagy's play calling, especially this year, I don't know what happened from 2018 to now, but by God, it is so bad. I've never seen a team throw a 5-yard pass on a 3rd and 12 so many times. I've never seen a team try running the football in the fourth quarter down 24 points or 17 points, whatever. I've never seen a team not go for it near their own midfield down 10 plus points. I just don't understand the thought process. I don't understand a jet sweep on fourth and one. I do not understand the design plays to roll Nick Foles out of the pocket when he is clearly a stationary pocket passer. I don't understand any of Matt Nagy's thinking when it comes to running this offense. I don't understand why he keeps running Demetrius Harris out there as tight end when he continuously makes mistakes. Meanwhile, you have a kid like Cole Kmet who gets two or three balls thrown to him and catches them all sitting on the sideline while you play Demetrius Harris. What is your love affair with this man? What has he done or what does he have on you that forces you to run him out there and continue to make mistakes on the offense that already isn't bad? I mean, already isn't good, I should say. None of it. None of it makes sense. And you know what? It's the same damn song and dance every single year. And it all goes back to one. I shouldn't say one. It goes back to multiple people. The McCaskey family, Ted Phillips, and the entire Chicago Bears organization does not care about winning. They are frauds. They are liars. They're going to tell you a story. They're going to tell you how things are going to get fixed, and they don't follow through on it, just like every damn Chicago team I've ever watched. And you know what? I'm as big a Bears fan as there is. I mean, I'm sure you can tell the passion that's coming out of my voice. But I'm very much tired. I'm very much fatigued from watching this team year after year. Especially last year, after that 2018 playoff run. I expected so much, and I got spit on by the entire Bears organization, like usual. I'm tired of it. I really don't understand how guys like my father, who is about to be 60 this next August, I don't understand how he has put up with it for so long. And it's sad to me. When I was a kid, my dad would be so passionate during the Bears game on Sundays. If I go over to his house and watch the game with him now, he's literally numb to everything bad that happens to the Bears. He's seen it all. He's not surprised anymore. And it's a sad thing. He's seen maybe 12 good years of Bears football, and 8 or 9 of them were in the 80s. The Bears are not a fun team to be a fan of. And you're going to say, I'm sure I'm going to get some responses. They're 5-2. Just relax. No, I'm not going to relax because it's the worst 5-2 team I've ever seen. Yeah, but they're still 5. I don't care if they're still 5-2 because guess what? In 2 weeks, they'll be 5-4. Because this week, you got the Rams. I'm sorry, not the Rams. This week, you lost to the Rams. Next Sunday, you got the Saints. And if any of you have the Bears beating the Saints, good on you. I hope you bet some money so you can lose it. Because you're wasting your time. So that's 5-3. Move on to the next week. It's the Bears and the Titans. So that's 5-4. Because ain't no way in hell that this Bears team is beating the Titans. Absolutely not. And if they do, hell, I don't know. I'll come on the show that next week and apologize to you dearly. I don't know. Whatever you want. Send me a tweet. Whatever you guys want me to do. If the Bears beat the Titans, I'll do it. At Second City Sam on Twitter. If you're confident in this team, I'd like to know how. Because at 5-2, I have never seen anything convincing telling me that this team is any good. Matter of fact, I'd be willing to put money on the Bears not making the playoffs this year after a 5-1 start. And if that's the case, they better get these cut these leashes off. Matt Nagy, gone. Ryan Pace, better be gone. I'm tired of the incompetence in the front office. I'm tired of the incompetence that's being put on the field. I'm tired of the Chicago Bears. I really, really am. Well, why don't you just switch teams? Yeah, I can't do that. I can't switch teams. I wish I could, believe me. But it is something that I simply cannot do. I really wish I could. I root for the Saints. But they are not, by far, meaning as much to me as the Bears do. I just wish they'd find a way to put it all together one year. Looking over the defensive side of the ball, though, that's another thing I want to talk about. Everybody claims that the Bears are this big, bad, vicious defense. Yes, they were. In 2018, they were. It's 2020. This defense sucks. Don't at me. Honestly, what about this defense do you see that makes you say, wow, they are good? What, that they don't give up as many touchdowns in the red zone? Well, guess what? They're still allowing the other team to get to the red zone 4 to 5 times a game. That's not a good defense. Oh, the least points scored. That's great. So they're a good red zone defense. That's fantastic. That doesn't matter, though, when your offense can't score points. And I'm not going to put the full blame on the defense. They are tired, and I'm sure they're mentally tired. They're tired of having to step up for the offense that is non-existent. They're tired of being put in crappy situations that that result in them looking stupid. It's not all on the defense, and you know what? It's barely on the defense. But I will say that the people, even in the national broadcast on Monday, they were talking about the Bears' defense being so vicious, being a top 10 defense in the league. I disagree. No shot. Top 20? Yes, sure. Maybe even top 15. But not top 10. I don't see it. What happened to our savage run defense? I get it. Eddie Goldman's out. That's cool. You still got Akeem Hicks. You still got Bilal Nichols. You still got Roy Robertson Harris. These guys are all supposed to be good. Khalil Mack, Robert Quinn. Obviously, those are the end guys, but you get my point. Where's the run defense? Because a few weeks ago against Tampa, Ronald Jones ran all over the Bears. All over. Mike Davis had a pretty good game against the Bears when they faced Carolina. Alvin Kamara is going to spank the Bears defense this Sunday. You look over to the next Sunday. Good Lord, tell me that the Bears are going to be able to stop Derrick Henry. No freaking shot. At least 125 yards rushing, calling it right now. The Bears' defense is not good. Khalil Mack's having an okay season. Robert Quinn hasn't earned his money yet this season. Eddie Jackson, and you know what? I shouldn't be blaming the players on the defense because my main blame on this defense goes to Chuck Pagano. Ever since Chuck Pagano took over for Vic Fangio after 2018, it does not seem like these guys are used to the best of their talents. You don't have to blitz every damn play. The Bears defense in 2018, which mostly are the same guys, did not blitz very often. They didn't need to. You sit back, you play zone defense. Kyle Fuller's great zone cornerback, not a very good man-to-man quarterback. Eddie Jackson hasn't looked the same since 2018. He's not the big play machine. He's not the ball hawk that he was in 2018. I don't understand fully how or what Chuck Pagano is doing that isn't working for this defense, but it needs to change. And I like Chuck Pagano. He's an awesome guy. He's a cancer survivor, very humble dude. But you know what? I don't think he's the right fit to run this defense. And you know, it's sad to say because I really love Vic Fangio, but I'm hoping I shouldn't say hoping, but I'm wondering if he may get fired in Denver after the season. I wonder if he'd be wanting or willing to come home and be the defensive coordinator for the Bears again. Because I would love that. Vic Fangio knew what to do with every individual player. He made Eddie Jackson a star. You know, he made Danny Trevathan look way better than the hell he looks this year. Because he has had an awful season. He made Kyle Fuller look like a Pro Bowler. Hell, he made Kyle Fuller a Pro Bowler. I think he'd do some really good things for Jalen Johnson, too. But we have Chuck Pagano. And the defense, I feel like the defense kind of got exposed last Monday against the Rams. But Sam, how do you suggest we fix it? I don't know. I just want it fixed. Because I'm tired of watching the same old crap every single year. So the Bears kick off Sunday against the Saints at 3:25. Looks like they'll be the game of the week. That means not good things for us because got embarrassed on Monday Night Football, national televised, and now looks like they're going to get embarrassed Sunday as the national televised game on Fox. So looking forward to that. Moving on because the Bears pissed me off. Going to take a quick timeout. I'm going to grab a little bit of water here, hot pipes. And coming up next, I want to talk about the World Series. Lots and lots to talk about the World Series. You're listening to Second City Sam's Hot Takes. And please don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. I'll be right back. Welcome back, Second City Sam's Hot Takes. I am your host, Sam Piopo, Second City Sam. If you enjoy the show, if you would like to, if you'd like to listen to me and see some of my tweets or tweet at me, please follow me on Twitter at Second City Sam. I have an Instagram. I don't really care about it though, but you can follow me there too if you'd like at Second City Sam. Add me on Facebook. I don't really care. So welcome back. I want to get right back into it, talking about the World Series. Oh boy, the Dodgers win the World Series 4-2. But that is not what everybody's talking about as of today. So, obviously, last night, Justin Turner for the Dodgers was taken out because of a positive COVID test coming back during the game. Okay, so they pull him out during the game. The Dodgers win the World Series, and then, boom, on the field, partying with his teammates, is Justin Turner. Now, why in the hell, or how in the hell, was that even allowed? How did he get back onto the field? How was there nobody to stop him from getting back on the field? Also, there's so many questions around this topic right now because it's not making a whole lot of sense. So you're telling me Justin Turner had a positive test mid-game, which meant that they had taken a test. He had taken a test either, well, it had to be after game five on the off day yesterday. No, Monday. Monday. They were off Monday. So he had taken a test then. The test obviously did not come back yet, and they allowed Justin Turner to play on an inconclusive test, which is totally against the rules, which is totally against what every MLB team has been doing for the entire 60-game season. If you have an inconclusive, an inconclusive COVID test, you have to sit out. Hell, three New York Mets had a inconclusive COVID test mid-season, and they had to postpone their game. So how in the hell did whoever runs this crap not see that Justin Turner's test came back inconclusive, or didn't come back in time? Who in their right mind allowed him to play? So not only does he possibly infect his teammates, if it is a true positive test, could be a false positive, you know, with this crappy testing that we have. Who in their right mind allowed him to play? Who in their right mind allowed him to celebrate with his team after the game, now possibly exposing tons of other MLB personnel, tons of other families around the Dodgers because they were all there? Another question, how in the world did Justin Turner wind up with COVID-19 inside the MLB bubble? Not making much sense at all. Did Justin Turner break the rules? Did Justin Turner go outside of the MLB bubble? Did Justin Turner bring somebody inside the MLB bubble? Something's wrong here, and the MLB is going to launch an investigation into this, I am sure. I'm sure they're going to launch an investigation into this. And it's a damn shame that, I hate the Dodgers more than anybody. I promise you, I hate the Dodgers more than anybody. But it's a damn shame that these guys can't enjoy their World Series win because the entire world, or the entire United States, is talking about Justin Turner's positive test mid-game, or Justin Turner's celebration after said positive test after the game. So the Dodgers might be in some trouble here in the future. Let me know what you think about this. What the hell happened? At Second City Sam, I want your opinions. Did Justin Turner break the rules? Should the Dodgers be in trouble? Should they be punished? What do you think? Tweet me, at Second City Sam. I am here for all responses. But there actually was a World Series one yesterday, so I'm going to talk about it because there's a few controversies around the game itself too. So Blake Snell, my man, Blake Snell was absolutely dominating the LA Dodgers last night. And I mean dominating. He looked really, really good. And you know what? I don't understand what happened here fully. So he goes 5 1/3. He gives up his second hit there in the sixth inning. With only one out. He gives up his second hit. He's had 9 strikeouts up until that point. No runs. It's still 1-0 Rays. He gives up his second hit, and manager Kevin Cash comes and yanks him. He yanked him. And then what happens? Anderson comes in. Nick Anderson. Good reliever. Absolutely good reliever. But guess what? Blake Snell comes out at only 73 pitches, I believe. 73 pitches, he yanks him. Dealing. He's absolutely dealing. Anderson comes in, blows it. Ouch. Pete Fairbanks comes in, blows it. Ouch. 3-1 Dodgers, final score. Probably the worst managerial decision in World Series history. And Dave Roberts has made a few himself, but this one was horrible, especially because it came back to bite him smack dab in the ass. How do you not ride your ace in that situation? Sixth inning, cruising, gives up his second hit. That's it, his second hit. And you yank him. And I was complaining about Joe Maddon in 2016 when he yanked Kyle Hendricks. This is worse than that by far. By far. And I feel bad. I feel bad for Blake Snell. I would immediately demand a trade out of that. Because, I mean, what does it look like to him? His manager doesn't trust him in that situation. And don't give me all the analytic bullcrap, because guess what? This right here, that game last night, proves that analytics and all that other bullshit is ruining the game of baseball. You don't leave your starter in who's dealing, because you're at a certain point that you promised yourself, you know, you would remove him if this and this happened. Bull. BS. Leave him in there. He's dealing. He's pitching you a gem when you needed it most. You could tell he does not want to come out. You yank him anyway. And I wanted the Rays to win the World Series. But I'm almost glad that that came back to bite Kevin Cash, because now he looks like a jackass, as he should. As he should. Anderson gets the loss, as he should, too. Actually, given a blown save in that situation as well. One thing about the Rays, though, I've noticed, obviously, especially in this World Series, they, aside from Randy Arozarena, had no hitting throughout this entire World Series. If they don't have a Arozarena for this playoffs, they have no shot in hell in even making the World Series. Because he was essentially their entire offense. And trust me, that kid is good. He is good. I don't know, I don't know what got into him for these playoffs, but he had a hell of a playoff. If there was ever a time to award the MVP to a guy who didn't win it, that was the time. Randy Arozarena is awesome, and I think he's only going to get better. So the Rays are going to need to build some hitting around that dude, because they struggled at the plate. I mean, looking at these averages in the World Series, I mean, we're looking at what? Let's see. 111. Arozarena, 364, 188, 125, 125, 316 for Manuel Margot, 111, 143, 368 from Kevin Kiermaier, 0.063 from Zunino. So, there you have it right there. The Rays just did not have enough clutch hitting. Meanwhile, on the other side of things, the Dodgers, you know, they're unbelievable. I mean, crazy. Corey Seager won the MVP. I called that, by the way. Mario, guy at work, asking me who to bet on for the playoff MVP. I told him Corey Seager. He didn't listen. He didn't take the bet. Well, neither did I, so I lost out on some money, too. The Dodgers are insane. You know, you got Mookie Betts. You got Justin Turner, who I believe is a free agent after this season. Well, now the season's over. They are just loaded. Everywhere you look, they have something there. And are they a repeat? I mean, shoot. I mean, I know the season just ended, but repeat? Could they go for two in a row? I think they absolutely could. Especially with that... I'm happy for Clayton Kershaw that he got his ring, but I'm not happy because I loved seeing him fail in the postseason. It was just one of those things that I enjoyed. Got nothing against the guy. Just one of those things. I mean, I liked seeing Ovechkin fail in the playoffs too, but he just won his ring a few years ago too. I liked making fun of the Blues for never winning a Stanley Cup. Now they're champions. Well, water champions. I got nobody to make fun of anymore, besides the Bears, and that's my own damn team. How do you like that? As looking at it right now, I would have the Dodgers repeating in 2021. But we'll see. That's a long time away. Sticking to baseball, the White Sox seem to be closing in on a manager. And I am not a White Sox fan, but I do wish them well in all things. But what in the hell are they doing thinking of hiring Tony La Russa? Tony La Russa? Are you kidding me? He's 76. He hasn't managed in 9 years. You know, which was a completely different era of baseball, pretty much. And he's going to manage a young, vibrant, energized baseball team who like to do things the new way, who like to have fun. I don't see it working. White Sox fans, you guys better be worried, because I know a few that, you know, think this may be a good move. I'm telling you right now, it's not. It is absolutely not. You're telling me a 76-year-old man is going to want to have fun with these kids? I don't know. Looking back, even when he was younger with coaching the Cardinals. God, he killed the Cubs when he was the Cardinals manager. But when he was the Cardinals manager, the guy was emotionless inside the clubhouse, in the dugout. I'm not a fan of that move. And I keep seeing these articles that it seems like it's closer and closer now that the Sox are going to be signing him. I don't like it. NBC Sports Chicago just came out with an article 3 hours ago. Sox hiring La Russa as next manager, gaining serious steam. Boy, howdy. If the White Sox screw this up, they are going to be the laughingstock of not only Chicago, they're going to be the laughingstock of Major League Baseball. Because with all the talent they have on that team, they have no business hiring a guy like Tony La Russa. No disrespect to Tony at all. It may sound like I don't even like the guy. That's not the case. He's just too old. He's seen his days. He's 76! He is a manager of yesteryear. He doesn't need to be managing a team in 2020, especially a young team like the White Sox. Why not go after AJ Hinch? Why not go after Alex Cora? Or even go local? Why not try a guy like AJ Pierzynski? Hell, rehire Ozzie Guillen. They already said they're not doing that. I don't know. I think the Sox are going down a dark road here. And if they don't make the right decision, it could come back to bite them, because I think they are oh so close to reaching that top, the top of the mountain. They're so close to being a World Series team, and a good manager might just push them over the edge. However, picking a bad manager, I shouldn't say a bad manager, picking the wrong manager may send them flying down that cliff that they had worked so hard to climb up. I don't know. Call me crazy. I don't think that's a good move. But we'll see what happens. Sticking to baseball some more, I want to talk a little bit about the Cubs, because everyone's saying that their championship window has closed. What do I think? I agree 100%. Now, I read an article saying that they're still co-favorites to win the NL Central next year. I don't buy that at all. I don't think John Lester's a Cub next season. I think there's some serious trade bait within when it comes to players like Chris Bryant or Yu Darvish. I don't think anybody would take Jason Hayward's contract, but hey, throw his name in there too. Javi Baez, Wilson Contreras. I wouldn't be surprised if any of those guys were to be shipped out of here. And guess what? I'm so fed up as a Cub fan, I don't really care if any of those guys get shipped out of here. Because changes need to be made with this team. The championship window is closed, sure, but there's still some talent on this team to build around. Whether they want to break it all down again and rebuild, I don't think that's really necessary. Retooling would probably be the better word used for the Cubs right now. Because they do have some pieces. If you want to keep Yu Darvish, cool. But I will say that his trade value is the highest it's ever been. Well, I shouldn't say ever. His trade value is the highest it's been in years. Chris Bryant has no trade value anymore. So whatever you can get for him at this point, I'd say do it. Because he's going to leave you anyway after this season. Anthony Rizzo's been here a long time. I don't see him going anywhere. He's the captain. He's the guy. But you never know. I'm not completely against him being shopped either. Wilson Contreras has a lot of trade leverage, I guess you'd say. I think you could definitely get some good pieces for him. But even so, I don't think you'd get enough. So I don't see him going anywhere either. Javi Baez had his worst season in the bigs. He batted around 190. Still, I think his trade value is pretty high, I would say. He struggled without the fans. He blames it on the fans not being there. Yeah, well, that's great. But I don't necessarily agree with that, but his trade value would still be high because he's a high-energy player. He plays a good defense. He's very flashy. He puts butts in seats. And teams want that. So I think there's value there as well. John Lester won't be a Cub next year. Jose Quintana probably won't either. Is the championship window closed? You bet your ass it's closed. And that's all I want to say about the Cubs. I'm going to take one more time out here. And closing down the show, I want to talk about the Blackhawks rebuild, the Bulls rebuild, and a little bit of wrestling too, as long as you stick around with me here. You're listening to Second City Sam's Hot Takes, and don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to the show. Be right back. All right, welcome back to Second City Sam's Hot Takes. I am your host, Sam Piopo, Second City Sam. Obviously, you know that because you are listening to the show. I do want to get back into it here with the Blackhawks announcing that they will be rebuilding as of now. As if we didn't already know that in the first place. After Coach Quenneville got fired just a few seasons ago, the Blackhawks said that they feel like they are a playoff-caliber team with playoff-caliber talent. Now, with virtually the same players aboard, same head coach Jeremy Colliton, the Blackhawks want to announce a rebuild. And they announce it like this. A message to Blackhawks fans. Quote, "We recently said goodbye to a pair of popular two-time champions and acquired some new players via trade and free agency. We understand it was tough to see those respected veterans go and realize you may have some questions about our direction. We'd like to address that direction and share why we're hopeful for the future of Blackhawks hockey. We're committed to developing young players and rebuilding our roster. We want more than another window to win. We want to reach the summit again and stay there. An effort that will require a stockpile of emerging talent to complement our top players. The influx of youth and their progression will provide roster flexibility and depth throughout our lineup. We were already the youngest team in the 2020 playoffs, and several Blackhawks experienced that intensity for the first time. This will help to further establish a culture that embraces the grind of improvement, driven by competitors who are relentless, engaged, and motivated by a team-first mentality to win. As our young players develop and learn how to win consistently, they'll make some mistakes. Inevitably, we'll miss the mark sometimes too, but we'll communicate openly with you on this journey together. We know that what comes next must be more than just words. And that inspires us. End quote. Chicago Blackhawks. Now, what do I see from reading that letter? I see a team, I see an organization who has essentially been lying to us for the past 2 to 3 seasons. They knew that this team wasn't good enough to win. They knew that there was not enough depth, there wasn't enough young talent for this team to build a summit to win, as they so nicely put. Now, after lying to us, they want to come out and say, yeah, this is a rebuild. Well, thanks a lot. So instead of starting the rebuild when you knew this team wasn't good enough, you continued to trade away draft picks. You continued to make dumb trades. And now look, you're in a position that you could have started while there were still enough talent on the team. You could have been rebuilding 2 to 3 years ago. Why has it taken us just now to draft a goalie to replace Corey Crawford? Why on earth did you bother signing Robin Lehner if you knew you couldn't afford him after his contract expired? I don't understand the thought process here. So now you're stuck with goalies like Kevin Lankinen and Malcolm Subban and Colin Delia, who you have absolutely no idea if they could even play and have success in the NHL. Because you didn't develop them. You didn't give them the playing time when Corey Crawford was injured. And now the Hawks are paying for it. And guess what? The veterans are pissed about it. Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook, they weren't even told of said rebuild. So they came out and had some words to the media about it, pretty much flaunting their unhappiness about it. So Stan Bowman finally decides to have a meeting with them and let them know what's going on, and now expects them to be a part of it? I don't understand the way they're doing this. I don't understand Stan Bowman at all. I think he's a big jerk who has no idea what he's doing anymore. And hasn't for quite a while, to be honest with you. Because, every promising young talent that he and the Hawks have had, he sent them packing. Philip Deneau, Teuvo Teravainen, just to name a few. Artemi Panarin, but that one's a little more full of details there. So I can't fully blame him for that one. But trading away draft picks has truly cost this team, especially when you're trading away draft picks for rental players like Andrew Ladd, who had no business being on that team a few seasons ago. The Blackhawks are in a rough spot, and the dark days are coming back for this franchise. And I want to, it's going to be actually interesting to see if the fans stick around for it this time. Because the Hawks were called bandwagon fans for years after they started to come back in 2008 when the team started, caring about winning. I want to see if the fans stick around. I know season tickets are going to be down. I don't think it'll sell out every game, if there's ever even fans back in the damn stands. I'm curious to know how they're going to go about this. Because with Stan Bowman heading this rebuild, I am not confident. because he hasn't proven he can make a simple trade, let alone rebuild an entire freaking hockey team. And don't give me this crap that Stan Bowman won 3 Stanley Cups, because guess what? Dale Talon built that 2010 team. Stan Bowman was good enough to keep a few of the guys around to win a few more. I shouldn't say I give him no credit, because he was able to put key pieces around the team for the 2013 and 15 years. But I don't give him credit for building the core players of this hockey team. I don't give him credit for keeping them all here either, because they wanted to be here. So there you go. There's your Blackhawks talk there. That's really bothering me. But yeah, quickly on the Bulls rebuild, I think they're doing some really cool things with Billy Donovan and I can't really say his actual name. Arturo Karnišovičs, whatever it is. They're going to be doing some good things. I'm excited to see how the Bulls progress. I'm excited to see if they make any trades. They have the 4th overall draft pick. The Bulls hopefully are on the right track on this rebuild. And depending on who they draft, which I have absolutely no idea who is even a possibility at this point, it's going to be interesting to see who they keep around. Zach LaVine, obviously, he's big trade bait if they want to, if they want a few good pieces. He's also still very young, so you can build around Zach LaVine if he's that type of player that you think he is. It's going to be interesting to see what Lauri Markkanen does, because his progression has taken a step back the last few seasons. There's a lot of interesting things with this Bulls franchise right now, and I'm curious to see what direction they go in after this draft and how they're going to be under Billy Donovan, who is a proven winner in the NBA, and he hasn't necessarily won the big game, but he's been to the playoffs a lot. He's known for developing talent. So I'm interested to see what happens here with the Bulls. Quickly here, before I get out of here, I want to talk a little bit about wrestling right now. The best thing going in wrestling, in my opinion, right now, is Bray Wyatt and Alexa Bliss. They are pure entertainment. It's awesome to see Alexa Bliss embracing this new character. Bray Wyatt is Bray Wyatt. He's the best. And WWE isn't doing too many fun things right now. I love the Hurt Business. I'm not as big a hater on Retribution as everyone else is right now. So I don't mind that angle either. There's a few things that need to be, fixed, but WWE is still entertaining to me, and I watch it whenever I can. AEW, on the other hand, AEW is trash. AEW is the Mark's wrestling show. Let me tell you why. Zero referees in that company know what they're doing. Zero referees can tell when there's somebody injured on the mat. There's no accountability. There's no credibility. They call themselves a sports-based wrestling promotion, yet they ran something like they did with Jericho and MJF on it. What in the blue hell was that? I don't understand this company. They're lying to you. It's false advertisement. It's a bunch of baloney. And I'm not a huge Jim Cornette fan, but whatever he says about this company is absolutely correct. Good Lord. The ridiculousness of some of the stuff they run on that show is beyond me. I like the wrestling. I like the wrestlers on that show. Jon Moxley's one of my favorite wrestlers in the world. I like him. But the stupidity of that show sometimes, I can't stomach a full episode usually. And I want to start covering it more on this show, so I'm gonna have to bite my tongue and watch it. But golly, they got a lot of work to do if they want to be credible. Because obviously the Marks are going to watch the show. It's been beating NXT, but I prefer NXT. I'm sorry. I prefer NXT to AEW, Dynamite. I really do. And that's what I watch every Wednesday. Not AEW, NXT. So I'm going to have to watch both shows. I'm going to probably, start recording one and watching one live and just going from there. But yeah, AEW is not this is definitely not on my top shows right now. I'd probably rather watch Impact Wrestling or some NJPW instead of that crap. But yeah, that's pretty much it for me, guys. I'm going to, it's a cold ass day out, so I ain't going to do nothing but sit on my couch and play some video games, maybe do a little chore around the house or two. But yeah, this has been the newest, freshest edition of Second City Sam's Hot Takes, which is now back every Wednesday. And starting today, it's back for good. I want to wish everyone a happy and safe Halloween. I'm being CM Punk for Halloween. I found a a costume that was definitely returned 4 or 5 times in the store that had 2014 on it, and it's a WWE costume. A CM Punk WWE costume was found here in 2020, and I got it. I had a rip on the leg, and I got it for $12 instead of $25. I sewed it. Well, my lady sewed it. And now I'm CM Punk. I'm the fat CM Punk. So happy Halloween. I hope you all enjoy it. I hope you are all safe and sound. I will see you next week right here on Second City Sam's Hot Takes. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. Tell your friends about the show. I am out of here.